Cam, and this is the Nerd Book Review, where we strive to broaden your fantasy horizons. Today, I will be reviewing In Solitude's Shadow by David Green. First book I am doing that was not specifically a Spiffbo finalist in here. I happened to speak with the author. I looked at the Goodreads review, and I decided that it looked like something I would like, and I was correct. All right, let me give you the book info, book stats real quick, and then I will give you the author bio. The book is 294 pages long. It was published in June of 2021. It is a self-published novel, the first book in the Empire of Ruin series. I looked at the second book in the series, which I'm actually reading currently and almost done with and also enjoyed, is a finalist for the UK Fantasy Novel of the Year. That kind of helped bolster my choice to choose it. The author, David Green. Let's read his bio real quick. David Green is a neurodivergent, internationally best-selling writer of the epic and the urban, the fantastical and the mysterious. With his character-driven dark fantasy series Empire of Ruin, or urban fantasy noir Hell in Haven, starring Haven's only supernatural PI, Nick Holleran, David takes readers on an emotional, character-driven, action-packed thrill ride that leaves a reader needing their next fix. Hailing from the northwest of England, David now lives in County Galway on the west coast of Ireland with his wife and train-obsessed son. When not writing, David can be found wondering why he chooses to live in and write about places where it constantly rains. So, let's go ahead and hopefully once again I will be having Chris do the book cover blurb.
An army is at the gates of Haltveldt, a nation built on war, and nothing is as it seems. Kaleen Alpenwood, a powerful warrior mage gifted with the Spark, makes a shocking discovery that sets into motion events that put her at odds with the very masters she serves. Reuniting with her mother Zana, a woman banished after a terrible crime, they team up with unlikely allies as they attempt to save the Fortress of Solitude from destruction. One thing's for certain. Ruin approaches if Solitude falls, and life will never be the same when the banished return.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for doing that. My quick take is that the book blurb is already pretty succinct, but Haltveldt, a nation built on hatred of elves and constant expansion, is about to face a new enemy while abandoning any rules they previously held to. So once again, we have a secondary world. Super easy to follow. I'm going to say this right now, that this novel, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And part of the reason why I loved it was it was so easy to get into the story. It did not require hours or a long period of time looking at a map to figure out where things are. We are in the basically the Empire of Haltveldt. I hope I'm saying that correctly. It is a almost completely continent-spanning nation that has conquered all of the other kingdoms, duchies, whatever, that surround it. The only kingdom not under their control is an elven kingdom who, it's pretty clear from the very beginning, is clearly on their last legs. Haltveldt is just too large and too genocidal and too out of control to be stopped. A lot of our story is going to take place in one place. It is a giant fortress called Solitude. It was built by a group of people called the First People, who we learn about in the prologue. Basically, the prologue is set 2,000 years before the main story. It is set right after a major battle where humans and elves in an alliance have managed to defeat a group called the First People. Very human or elf-like as well. They're described as having milk-white skin. Most of them seem to have yellow eyes and white hair. A little bit taller than humans and elves, but otherwise also fairly human-like. So these First People could use a type of magic. All of them could use this magic. It's not the main magic that the elves and the humans will use throughout the series. During this battle, where they looked like they were going to beat the humans and elves, they were the power at the time. Their magic fails them for some reason that we don't find out about early on anyways. And the humans and elves are able to defeat them. The humans and elves can use a type of magic that's called the spark. People who use it are called sparkers. The magic system in this, while it's pretty set, it's pretty hard magic rules, but there are some, there's a little bit of mystery about it even still, which is just fine. It's kind of like leads to a theological debate even within the series that makes a, that plays a huge role as well on like what is and isn't okay to use this magic for. So the way their system works is the spark takes energy either from yourself or from those around you, and you use it to cast spells, basically. Not like spells like you think where you have to do incantations and things like that, but use energy especially. You can do shield. The way that it's described is a little bit like Wheel of Time, which I'll get into a little bit later. Because there are a lot of Wheel of Time Easter eggs in there. The author, I guess, used to have a YouTube channel on the Wheel of Time. And as a huge Wheel of Time fan, I want to say first off, this is not derivative. It's its own thing. But I think that there are a lot of ways that using the Wheel of Time, like the some sayings that are in there that make it easy to understand. So the magic system, most of the time, is, like I said, it's the sparkers. Both humans and elves use the same magic at this current time. We are told that both elves and the first people used a different kind of magic, you know, back in the day, but now they both use that. As I've said, the Empire of Haltveld is about to take over the Elven Kingdom. The elves who live in the Empire have been enslaved. They are treated very poorly, and they're basically considered subhuman. The Empire is definitely racist and they're not the good guys. So the people that that are in Haltveld, not the good guys. I still don't know that I would necessarily classify this as grimdark, but there's some grimdark elements in it for sure, especially as it goes on. But I'd probably consider it more like epic fantasy. We just kind of have a general idea that one of our point of view characters will start off in the south of this continent and make their way north. The Fortress of Solitude, it's funny saying that, is in the north. And then we don't really know what happens farther north than that. But a big part of the story will take place in Solitude itself. Like I said, it's really easy. You don't have to have a map even to understand what's going on or where things are. That's not what this is about. It's not about going to a whole bunch of different places and needing to know like where tactically on the map, you know, what people are controlling and whatnot. So it's definitely more character driven. Story is also obviously very important. There are several point of view characters. This is not a single point of view character book. The first point of view character in the So I guess technically the second point of view character, because the prologue has a character named Jacob, but they're 2,000 years before the main part of the series, so not important for the rest of the book, just kind of a setup scene. But Zana, she's a powerful sparker. She's been exiled to Solitude for using the power to eviscerate a person, which is basically steal their life force, kind of turns them into a puddle of goo. That is against the religion of the sparkers. Let's stop, take a quick pause. I don't need to redo the whole episode, but so the sparkers believe that they got their power from their gods, who were two people that first got the spark and that basically were elevated to god status because of this. At this point, it's thousands of years after that, so we're not entirely certain whether those people were real even anymore. Haltveld itself, the Empire, doesn't help because they rely on propaganda, they hide things. So there are a lot of things that people aren't even sure, you know, whether they're true or not anymore. But theologically, their God said that you're only supposed to use the spark for good. So at the beginning of the story, at least, the sparkers are, even though they're used to fight in the war against the elves, they're supposed to just be healing people and helping, but the way the Emperor will get around that is by sending them to frontline units where, like, it's necessary to use their power to to help themselves, maybe to kill other people or kill elves specifically, in order to save the people that they're supposed to protect. So that's kind of how they get around that. A lot of Sparkers don't think the rules should be the way they are anymore. Like I said, it's been thousands and thousands of years since their gods that may or may not have been real were in place. So there's a lot of theological debate as the book starts. So back to our first point of view character, we have Zana. She's a very powerful Sparker, probably like the second most powerful. She was exiled to Solitude for using that power to eviscerate a person. Like I said, that's stealing their life force. It's something that is punishable by death. But she was powerful and influential, so she's exiled to Solitude. Solitude, as I said, is that northern fortress. It's a place where people who are political exiles or maybe who have done something wrong but are too powerful to kill are sent to. We start off with Zana. She is a person who generally believes in following the rules. She would kind of, I guess, be considered on the light side if you're talking about that. When the story starts, she is teaching Arlo, who we learn very quickly is both half elf and half human, and which is why he was sent to Solitude instead of to the university to be taught to use his magic, because as a half elf, he would have been killed. Elves who have the spark in the Empire are murdered. The spark will, like, it's going to manifest itself if you have the innate talent. So think it's like a genetic trait. Zana, through her teaching Arlo, we kind of almost get like an info dump on the background of things. Now, some people don't like info dumps. I am a sucker for an info dump if it's done correctly. And I really thought this one was. Because she's teaching Arlo all of this stuff, like, we get to learn the magic system really well early on. We get to hear some of the history of the kingdom or the empire of Haltveld and the elves and everything, right? It's done as she's teaching him. It is, I mean, it really is an info dump. But like I said, as long as it's done well, then I'm a fan of an info dump. I don't need to have to learn things slowly here and there. And it can distract me at times if I'm trying to figure out, like, why something is being done the way it's being done, if it hasn't already been explained. I don't like to find out, you know, afterwards about that. So, first point of view character, Zana. Her daughter, Kayleen, is the second point of view character. She's a Sparker who's been doing that fighting in the army as they fight their last elven lands. She's not a fanatic and supporter of Haltveld by any means, but she is a good Sparker who does her duty and follows the rules of the Order. Think kind of like the White Tower of... if you're thinking Wheel of Time. But she's also estranged from her mother, has been for at least 10 years because of her mother killing her father in order to save her. That's kind of a minor spoiler, I guess, but it's something that's pretty quickly. We know that what happened. We don't get... It takes a while for the whole story to get fleshed out as to why and what the reason is, but we know pretty quickly about what happened. She is young. She's like in her 30s. Zana is actually considered young too for a Sparker. She's in her 50s. Also a little bit like Wheel of Time. Sparkers can live hundreds of years. I don't think we're talking like 500 to 1,000. It felt more like a few hundred years. At one point, elves are mentioned that they live a very long time. This is later in the story, but an elf is mentioned as having gray hair, which meant that they... Or having silver-tinged hair, which means that they're at least 500 years old. So I guess we can assume in that case that elves are, you know, 500 to 1,000 years, somewhere in that range. It's not defined exactly, just like Sparkers aren't. But I think we can assume that they live a lot longer. Our third point of view character is Cade. He is Arlo's father. He's been disgraced because of his bastard son. Most people don't know, obviously, that his son is half-elf. But they know that his son's a bastard because he wasn't married. Luckily for Cade, still, his family is very powerful and influential. That is why he's still an envoy to Solitude, sits on the King's Council. He's a joke, kind of, because he's also a spice addict. So he's disgraced and an addict, so he's not really well-regarded, but he sits on the council because his family is powerful enough for him to sit on the council. We have a fourth point of view character who's a minor point of view character for sure. in this one. He does play more of a role in the second one. His name is Nexes. He is the master of war and also a boyhood friend and confidant of Emperor Locke, who is the Emperor of Haltvelt. Nexes is definitely a bad dude, but because of him, we get to see a little bit of that point of view of Locke and the Emperor and why they're doing what they're doing. There's literally no way to classify the Empire as anything but evil, genocidal bastards. They're not good people. But they actually have a little bit of a reason why they do what they do. I'm not going to get into that here on the podcast. They do the evil things they do because they think they're necessary. You still aren't giving them a pass because there's always another way, as it said. That's a kind of a motto in the books. But they certainly don't ever choose the side of good when they're doing making their decisions. So Nexes, like I said, him and Cade and Nexes are both not Sparkers. They're just regular humans. I've already talked about the magic system and how it reminds me of Wheel of Time a little bit. And like I said, the author is a fan of Wheel of Time. But I'm going to also say that I got a kick out of those comparisons, and where I'm in no way saying that this is derivative of Wheel of Time. The world itself especially is not like that. There's no pure good, pure evil. There's none. There might be a chosen one. It's hard to tell at this point in book one. But they're not. But even, you know, the bad guys have a reason for being bad guys. They're not just the dark ones. So the main story also, I guess I should get into that real quick, is that the elves are about to be destroyed. But the banished, those first people, they come back and they are outside of the walls of Solitude. So the whole thing is that that Kayleen and Cade, the two of those point of view characters, they're trying to get north to help save, if possible, the Arlo and Zana. But the Emperor and his lot do not want that them to be saved. They kind of want them to be an example so that people can attack the banished that way. For most of the time, we don't know what the banished motives are exactly. We just know that they're back. They're in mass, hundreds of thousands, close to 1 million people. So their entire people are trying to come back south. That is the main plot of the story. I don't think it's really necessary to get into any more of that. Let's go ahead and get into the recommendation phase then. We are, it looks like, about 15 to 20 minutes into this, and we don't need to go too crazy long. So, on the did we like it, this book I loved. And I also have read most of book two now, and I love it as well. A good way that this book is helping me to remember how I came up with my rating system. Especially when dealing with indie books, I tend to say books at 3.5 or a 4.5, I will give a 4 or a 5 when I'm on Goodreads because I think that that helps, you know, get some visibility out. And I generally don't rate anything that I rate lower than, like, say, a 3. So if I think a book has a 1 or a 2, I just stop reading it and I don't throw a review or a rating out there. So a 3-star is about the lowest that I usually will give out and you know, actually put the review up because that's at least a positive. But this book is where I'm doing the podcast, and I'll say this is a hard 5. Now, a hard 5 for me is what I would describe as if Goodreads had a 4.5 or Amazon had a 4.5 rating or a 5, I would still give this one a 5 and not that 4.5. I had a heck of a time putting this book down the first night I read it. I would have read it in 2 days pretty quickly if I hadn't had been so busy on day 2. Instead of being sitting in my composter, I actually spent most of the day doing maintenance on my composter and then running a front-end loader to do cleanup. So I just didn't have time to read it. After that, my son had his first friendly soccer match. Did not go well for his team, but my son didn't play too bad. So we were both pretty happy about that. Very busy, so it took me a second day to be able to read it and get done with it. Like I said, I love the book. There's a lot of Wheel of Time Easter eggs in there. When the Kayleen it walks into an inn and the innkeeper is kind of a jerk and he's really skinny and she says, "Never trust a skinny innkeeper," I got the biggest grin on my face because, yeah, that's something that you know, is pretty big in the Wheel of Time series that the crew always mentions. I like that the characters, this is a character-driven book, you know, they don't make a bunch of stupid decisions always just because they tend to do what they think is best. And they're doing these things. I think they're making logical decisions for the most part, even if emotions are, you know, they play a role, obviously. The storyline is easy to follow. It's clear. It's concise. There's not a whole bunch of weird things that I need to understand. The only thing I would say that I don't love is I don't like the necessarily love the word droking being the replacement for the F word, as it's used a lot in this. But I mean, I get over that pretty quickly. I loved the characters. I loved the world building. I like the storyline. It's easy to read. And like I said, I've read book two now, or most of book two at this point, and I still enjoyed it. I'll have to take a break to get to another podcast book, but after that, I fully plan on reading book three. On the how did it make us feel, I'm not going to say this is N.K. Jemisin and the Broken Earth trilogy. That's kind of our, that was Katie and I's baseline book of, like, that one both made both of us cry. This one's not making me cry, but I did care about all the characters. Even the kid Arlo, who's 12, he makes good decisions, and he's a likable kid. I think that a big thing with this is that most of these characters are likable. They're not, I mean, Nexies is, he's a monster. He's not likable, but, you know, even then he has some humanity about him. So I think that I like characters that aren't doing stupid things just to do stupid things. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but I really do feel like there are a lot of books, this is true in both traditional and indie books, where characters are just idiots. And their stupidity is what gets them into a lot of the problems that they encounter. But this isn't that case in this one. Everybody is doing what they think is for the best. So, like I said, not Broken Earth trilogy, but still a good one. I think that just about anybody can read these books. There's no sex scenes. The only profanity is a made-up word. There are some murders. A lot of people die, but it's not super graphic for the most part. And I think that anything from young teen all the way through adults is a good audience for this. It's clearly not YA, but it's also not grimdark to the level that you wouldn't want a 12 or 13-year-old to be reading it. On a 5-star rating, this is my hard 5 that I mentioned. I loved it. And honestly, I would recommend giving this a shot. I think it's a good book that if you like epic fantasy, that it fits in that wheelhouse. I'm kind of a little bit surprised. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I can talk to David at some point and find out if he's even really tried to get it published, because I kind of feel like this is the kind of book that would be in the wheelhouse of someone like Orbit or something, because it appeals to a wide audience. It's character-driven. It's got characters who you care about, a really cool, clear magic system, and a world that makes sense and is easy to know where things are. A lot of other continents are talked about, but they're and maybe, you know, as the world moves forward, we'll see some of those. But we're not dealing with something where you're going to have to look back at a map on a regular basis first. So easy read, fun read. If you like Wheel of Time and want something that has some Easter eggs in it, then it's almost a must read. Loved it. My next book that I will be doing is going to be another, it should be the last of the Spiffbow winners that I have not done. It'll be Rain and Ruin by J.D. Evans. It was a couple of years ago the Spiffbow winner. After that, I'm going to go two ways to how I'm going to be choosing my next, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 authors. It's going to be a mixture of, I'm going to go back and look at every Spiffbow finalist who had a rating of 8 or higher, and I'm going to see if I can get their books, and I will read and review those, put them on the podcast if I enjoy them. And then the other thing I'm going to be doing is I did a bunch of interviews with authors that had finalists in some of the Spiffbowl competitions. I also had a few series that I just absolutely loved that I either did a review of that series by an author or just did the author interview. And I'm going to review some new series by those same authors. So I have spoken with Alec Hudson, another one of those. If you liked Wheel of Time, I thought that his main character in his series kind of reminded me of if Lanfear from Wheel of Time had been the main character instead of Rand. I really liked the series, his first one, and I'm going to be reviewing the new series he's put out here. Same thing with a couple of other people. Richard Nell, the Ash and Sand series, is probably my favorite indie series of all time. I'm hoping to review his the first book in the sequel series for him as well. So I'm going to do that. I think I'm booked up for probably maybe 3 months now with ideas. But once again, if you are a self-published author and you're listening to this and you think that you have a series that would fit me, basically anything, but I'm not a fan of lit RPG, epic fantasy, grimdark. Those are my wheelhouses, but I'm open to almost anything. You can reach me at nerdbookreview@gmail.com, on Facebook at nerdbookreview, on Twitter and Instagram. I have nerdbookreview as the handle. Feel free to reach out to me. Any of those places. Let me know how you think of the series. If you would give us a rating and review wherever that you happen to be listening to this podcast, we would love that as well. Obviously, if it's a good review. If not, then reach out to me and let me know why you don't like it. I have now got a few books that are lined up as well for both Barry and Chris and for the winter. So I feel like the podcast is really starting to flesh itself out, and I'm excited to move forward. All right. You have a wonderful week, and I hope you enjoy your books. Thank you.